Welcome to the Woadsman Podcast, catching up with all things bushcraft, wild camping, and the great outdoors.
So, myself and Tom would like to wish you all a very happy 2023. In our last episode, the Woadsman Trivia, which we had a lot of great feedback on, Joe Price was the winner, and he chose the Bearded Fisherman and the One Veterans Charity in Ireland to make his donation to. Now, all of the guests put in some money on Just Giving, and we created a small prize pool to donate. And we did ask if some of you could help fill that pot. Unfortunately, with it being Christmas, we had a few messages saying it was just a little bit too hard and too soon to that period to be able to donate anything, so we have decided to extend that until the end of February. Now, if you can make a small donation to either one of these charities, it would be absolutely amazing, and you can find all of the details to do so in the show notes or in the previous episode. But it doesn't have to be a lot, and it would just be really nice to make a small difference to these charities. With all that being said, we do hope you enjoy this episode, and send in your Bushalutions for our little Bushalution bumper episode that will be coming out later this season. Stay safe, guys, and I'll see you soon. So, hey, guys. Welcome to the Woadsman Podcast. Obviously, here with Tom.
Hi, guys.
And we're actually by the fireside, which has been a unfortunately rare occasion for us for the last few months, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. We've had to go a little bit more remote, haven't we, as sort of life gets in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, work's been busy.
Very busy. And it's been an exciting time. It's been a good time. But there haven't been many opportunities for us to get out together and record by the fireside. I think this is the first camp we've had together since the Bushcraft Show.
It is, yeah, it is. Too long.
But which is too long, because we've both done respective things outdoors since. I've done some courses, Liam's done lots of camps.
Yeah, my stalking. I mean, you've been doing lots of day trips and trips away, haven't you?
Yeah, lots of trips away, lots of walks and stuff, but haven't filmed them because it's just been time for me to get away from work and just to get out in nature and spend time with my other half. So it's been a really exciting period.
It's middle of winter for us now, isn't it? It's December.
It is.
And it's cold. I mean, today we're blessed with the weather. It's warmed up a little bit.
We've had
a big shift in the weather. But
yeah, last week it was minus seven in London. So really, really cold. A spell of cold weather moved in.
Yeah, it got to about -8, -9 down out here.
Yeah.
Really cold.
But it's warmed up just in time for this camp, actually. It's currently +7.
Yes.
So that's quite a big shift, actually, in a few days.
Yeah, it's almost 20 degrees, really. It's crazy. It's going up to, 13, I think, tomorrow. So that will be the full 20-degree change.
Yeah, that'll be a full swing. Which is mad, just in the space of a few days.
Yeah. But talk about winter camping, you actually had something through, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I had a message from one of our listeners, Lee Worthy, and he said, "Hi mate, it's Lee. Just wondering, what's the best piece of kit for keeping yourself warm, other than a sleeping bag, of course? Love the podcast, so happy you're still going through the winter. Hope to see you at the Bushcraft Show next year." Thank you very much, Lee, for writing in. I hope to see you at the Bushcraft Show as well. If you do spy us, come and say hi.
I'm sure you will. We're like tractor and trailer. That's where we coined the term, isn't it?
That is. We're always together at the Bushcraft Show. Please do come and say hello. But that's a really good question. And we will talk a bit about sleeping bags, definitely, because that is one of the first lines of defence for camping in the winter.
Yep.
But there are other things you can do, and there are other pieces of equipment that are really important for keeping yourself warm.
Yeah. So many aspects to it, isn't there?
Yeah. We recorded a podcast yesterday, didn't we? A trivia Christmas episode.
We did.
Which you would have heard back at Christmas time.
Yep.
But we actually recorded that yesterday with all the guys. And one of the questions in that trivia was methods of heat loss.
Yes. Yeah. There's five main methods, isn't
there? Five methods, yeah. So convection, conduction, radiation, evaporation, so when you sweat, and then that sweat evaporates, you lose a lot of heat that way.
Which is covered, that covers perspiration, for example.
Absolutely. And if you, fall in a puddle, and then that evaporates, that's going to draw a lot of your heat away.
Yeah, evaporative loss, that's how a lot of air conditioners actually work through evaporative cooling. They take the water takes the heat and then cools down.
Yeah, exactly.
Cools down the room that way.
The other one is respiration, and obviously as the guys at Frontier say when they're teaching the bit about keeping yourself warm, they say, well, you can't really do much about breathing.
Yes.
So it's about managing the other methods of heat loss. So yeah,
absolutely. Obviously, there's some cultures where they've managed to kind of refine their breathing techniques, and that's incredible, really.
Which
but
is
not
insane.
Something we can do on little trips out.
No, exactly. So we're coming to this question from the perspective of the UK, because obviously, people like Joe Price, who we had on our episode, they live in Sweden. They live in the sticks, and they're going to experience very, very different winters.
Yeah, absolutely.
To us,
like he was saying, it's a lot. Even though it's really cold, it's a dry cold over there. So
yes.
Even though there's snow and ice around, it's funnily enough, it's so cold that it is that dry state. Whereas over here, when we get that kind of weather,
it's wet.
It's slushy, isn't it?
It's damp everywhere.
Yeah.
It's rained for the last couple of days.
We
before that, it snowed.
Yep.
We've had sleet. We've had ice.
And that's what I mean. When it snows here, it's not too long until it goes that slushy.
No.
Where everyone knows it. It doesn't hang around in that fluffy state for too long.
Yeah.
This cold snap, it actually did because it was just so cold.
It did. I was out sorting the playground at work, so the kids didn't slip over.
Yeah, I was doing the same on the road on the estate.
So we're coming at it from a UK perspective. There's loads of great content on on YouTube. People like Joe Robinette do some fantastic videos of him out in Canada doing the extreme cold stuff.
Yeah.
Joe Price does loads of stuff on Living to Learn where he shows his sort of daily life in Sweden.
Yeah, there's
so many people.
Like Survival Russia, you know, he's in
Survival Russia.
Negative 25 to 30 sometimes in a hot tent.
Absolutely. So there's loads of great people hot tenting in extreme conditions.
And that's one good method, hot tenting, which we will get onto. But I think, you know, starting off with the basics, like Lee says, sleeping bags is a good starting point.
It is a good starting point, and we can build up off it.
Yeah, and it's not the only... although it's not the only thing that keeps you warm, obviously it's one of the most vital bits because you're spending 6 to 8 hours in that.
Absolutely.
Night, you know, completely open to the elements, really. And we've both got different sleeping bags, haven't we?
We have. I've brought with me a Rab winter bag.
So yours is down?
So mine is down. Mine's a Rab sleeping bag and it's a winter down bag. I have to be very, very careful not to get it wet, obviously. And in a damp environment like we're in now, that is incredibly important because as soon as it gets wet, it loses its insulative value. The insulation clumps together and then you'll get pockets of sort of damp down all clumping in and you'll just be cold. You'll be uncomfortable. You'll hate it. You'll probably rage quit and go home in the middle of the night.
That's why if I look behind me now, you actually don't have your sleeping bag out right now because that ambient humidity will only be drawn to something so dry.
Exactly. Neither of us have got our sleeping bags out yet. We will get them out ahead of time before we want to get in them to allow the down to loft.
That's it.
But at the moment, there's a bit of mist in the air, it's a little bit damp, so we're not exposing them to that moisture. If we were really worried, we could bring a bivy bag. Neither of us have bothered for this trip because we've both got ground sheets. We both are keeping ourselves off the wet ground with a waterproof layer. So we're not too worried, but we're having to be mindful of that ambient humidity, as Liam says.
Yeah, absolutely. And even with me, I've got a synthetic-based sleeping bag system. So mine's Carinthia. It's a Defence 4. So actually, probably a bit overkill for the weather we have at the moment.
Same as mine. Mine's more rated than we need.
Yeah.
Mine will be probably 10 degrees warmer than we need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, mine was a case of it was already packed in the bag, which I don't normally do. I don't normally keep my sleeping bag in there, but we'll go into why not to do that a little bit later. But mine's synthetic, so they've based the fibres in mine on reindeer hide, which we know is a really great insulator.
Great insulator, hollow fibres.
Exactly, so it's a synthetic hollow fibre, and yeah, it's really, really warm, but it does need that time to loft up and get that air, that spring back.
Yeah.
Because that's obviously how sleeping bags work, isn't it?
Yeah. So yours will be slightly better in damp conditions.
Yeah.
I have to be a little bit more careful in my bag. Both work.
But my compromise is mine's heavier.
Yours
than
is
yours.
Heavier than mine.
Yeah.
So mine's a warmer bag and packs down smaller. So it's all weighing these things up.
And
some people prefer one.
Yeah. In Arctic expeditions, they prefer, funnily enough, a down bag because of that weight loss.
Yeah. And I guess it's the dry cold again.
Yeah,
so.
And it's that mitigation of moisture control, I guess, in them aspects. And that's one thing with our sleeping bags we always both do, isn't it? So although we don't take them out, like we've just said, in a damp environment early, they're going to be out for the whole night. So in the morning, we make sure we always air them as well.
We always air them. The amount of condensation that you get, even if you do everything right, you dry your feet, you don't wear wet clothes, you don't wear wet socks, you allow yourself to sort of not be sweaty when you get in your bag. If you do all that right, you don't breathe in your bag, so you don't never put the sleeping bag baffle over your mouth and breathe into your bag, because the amount of moisture you will put in your sleeping bag, you're only gonna all you're gonna do for the short time, you might feel a bit warmer, but all you're gonna do is over the time of the night, you're gonna decrease the effectiveness of that sleeping bag.
Yeah, I mean, you've only got to look at your bedroom window on a cold morning to see how much condensation one just breathes out. There's that much moisture in the air.
And even if you do everything right, you're still going to perspire, and you're going to naturally create some moisture in that bag overnight.
Well, the better the bag, the more you perspire, funnily enough.
Exactly.
Because it's keeping you more insulated.
Yeah, and so, unless it's raining, of course, we hang our bags. If it's raining, we wait until the sun comes out, even if it's only briefly, or if there's wind and it stops raining for a second, then we will hang our bags. But it's just important to do that and get in the habit of hanging your sleeping bag.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sleeping bags, obviously, as we were saying, they've both got this filling inside and traps the air, which is the biggest insulator of all. Air is the best insulator, so that's why it's important to get them lofting up and keep them in a good condition. So going back to why I don't store my bag or my sleeping bag in its compression sack, and I know it's the same for you,
Tom. I never store them compressed.
It's important to let them be in that lofted state 90% of the time, because if they get too used to being compressed, they'll just remain like that.
Yeah, I mean, I even take that to extremes, and I don't actually pack my sleeping bag until the day I leave for the trip that I'm going on.
Yeah, same as me.
Because I just don't want... it won't make any difference that
unless
short
it's
time.
Like this for me. You know, but I've been on a trip 2 days ago.
2 days ago, and it's stayed in your bag. But on the whole, I keep it in its bag, in its large bag. It has a lofting bag to allow it not to be compressed while it's stored. I leave it in the cupboard in that state, in a dry environment, so it's not getting any moisture, it's not going mouldy, and it's allowed to loft, and the insulation in it isn't being compacted over a long period of time, because again, over time, your sleeping bag will become less effective.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's probably a good route onto other insulators which are similar as well, like, you know, down jackets, for example, which work on the same kind of technology as sleeping bags, don't they?
They do indeed. So they've got baffles full of an insulative material, whether that be synthetic, whether that be down. And it helps insulate you to the cold, and it stops you losing your body heat to the environment.
They're impressively warm, and they again pack down incredibly small, and if you're not using them, if it's not cold enough for the night, normally if they pack down into a little thing, they can be used as a little makeshift pillow. So they're really, really good, and there's multiple brands that make these bits of equipment. You know, Rab, Hardland.
I got Emma an Arc'teryx one. I bought myself an Arc'teryx one, saved up for it. Emma liked it more than I did. Well, actually, I really liked it, but she really, really liked it. And so she started wearing it, and it's now hers.
That's brilliant.
So she did well out of that.
It's been acquired.
It's been acquired. So she wears an Arc'teryx puffer. I wear a Rab one. And yeah, they're good bits of kit. They do keep you warm.
And they're a good mid layer, because I find, because obviously they're quite, when you're wearing them just as a jacket on their own, they can be a good shell. When the wind factor comes up, and that's one big thing, is wind chill. And again, that is going back quickly to sleeping bags, probably why a bivy bag in some situations is a game changer, isn't it?
Definitely. It will add to the warmth of your bag, and it will be that outer layer that will stop you losing heat to the environment.
Yeah, and again, allow your moisture that you are building up inside to get out, and prevent the moisture from outside getting in.
Yeah, so a good bivy bag is a good investment, especially for Britain and England and Scotland and Wales, because it's wet here.
It's a damp environment, all right.
It's a very damp environment.
And I think bivy bags, in fact, give you about 1 or 2 degrees on top of your sleeping bag because of that reason as well. It's just another shell, isn't it? Another air baffle.
Another thing you can do is you can buy a silk liner for your sleeping bag.
Oh, now you're talking.
And that just adds about another degree to your bag. It keeps your bag from getting sweaty, from getting dirty, and so it stops it degrading over time, and therefore it's more effective, keeps you warmer in the long term. So silk liner is a good option for adding about a degree to your bag. Combine that with a bivy, you're going to get 2 or 3 degrees extra out of your sleeping bag.
Absolutely. And that kind of goes into what we were just talking about with the jackets, that almost they go hand in hand, because it's an example of exactly what a jacket is. It's part of a layering system.
Yes.
So a sleeping bag is part of the layering system. So you have your ground mat, which again is a vital part of the sleep system, isn't it?
Because stops all of your sleeping gear getting wet.
You could have the best sleeping bag in the world if you just slept on the ground with no mat. You'd be in for a really rough night.
You would.
You'd lose 90% of your temperature would go straight into that floor.
Yeah, the amount of heat you'd lose in your environment down through to the ground is insane. So
yeah,
having that, whether it's a foam mat, I've got a foam mat, you've got an inflatable.
I do, yeah.
Whatever it is, have something to insulate you from below, because that's super important.
I mean, mine has an R value, which in winter I wouldn't use an air mat if it didn't have an R value.
No.
Because it's just, again, you do have that bit of air, but it's so small, and you're compressing it so close to the ground that it's, again, a magnet for that heat.
Yeah. And I've got a foam mat that is rated for an R value of about 3.
Yes.
It's designed for an all-year use. It's a military one. It's NATO, a multi-mat, and it's really, really good.
Really, really good.
And it's rugged as well. So
that's the benefit again, isn't it? You know, you can sleep in peace of mind in a thorny area where I have to really scour the place.
Yeah, so it's just, again, it's personal preference, but either works, and it's just how you want to go about it. Talking about what you were saying with layering systems and the down jackets, Liam. Down jackets have another benefit. They're really light.
Yes.
So light. Whilst you might not want to get it, like putting loads of big bulky layers on inside your sleeping bag can actually negatively affect the bag's performance.
Yeah, absolutely, because you're compressing the bag in different ways. You're actually stopping that heated air kind of getting to your body.
Yeah, and sometimes if it's so tight in there that you're squeezing all of the hot air out the top, which has happened to me because I'm a big lad,
yeah,
and some of my sleeping bags are made for smaller people, if I've even got a jumper on in some of my sleeping bags, I can just feel all the hot air being squeezed out because there's not the room in the bag for that, and it's just, I'm basically shooting myself in the foot then. It's becoming counterproductive.
Yeah.
But with something like a down jacket, because it's so light, you can just put it over the top.
Yeah, absolutely.
And use it as an extra duvet, because it's so light, it's not going to compress the down very much, but you're adding all of that extra down value on top.
Yeah, yeah,
so
you are.
So that's another
or underneath
tip.
You.
Or underneath you. So sometimes I end up taking off my barber and having that as an extra layer underneath me.
Well, we use sheepskin sometimes or deer hides. I've even put them on top of my air mat. I did it the weekend, in fact. I was in a Lavu, it was probably about -6. And I had a wool blanket wrapped around my whole sleep system, on top of the mat, wrapped around my sleeping bag, and under that I had a sheepskin as well.
Yeah.
So it just really, really helped, and I could really tell the warm bit of that sleeping system.
Absolutely, and you'll probably feel more benefit by having the insulation underneath you and allowing your bag to do the work than putting on your jacket and then getting in your sleeping bag. Now, there are some clothes that both of us wear in our sleeping bags. We're not saying don't ever wear clothes in your sleeping bag, because some people
I wear my trousers often. My legs don't often feel that cold unless, you know, when I'm wearing my trousers sometimes, if I've got to get up in the night, I've got to be attending to the fire, I'll just leave them on.
And then I personally, I don't wear my trousers in my sleeping bag, but sometimes I will bring a specific pair of thermal garments that are sort of designed to be worn in a sleeping bag, so base layers made by Icebreaker and other companies like that.
Or softy trousers, you know, the military softy
trousers,
stuff.
Yeah.
That's again kind of like a down jacket, but synthetic fiber, big, kind of almost like tracksuits, padded tracksuits, like a spacesuit, but really compresses down, small and very lightweight. But no, it's mainly when I'm in my sleeping bag, base layers are what I'm normally in. So
same
merino wool, if it's in winter, or, you know, just long johns or something.
Yeah, so tonight I haven't actually brought my base layers, but what I have brought is I've brought a spare pair of socks.
Nice.
And a spare pair of woolen underpants. Sorry, ladies, to talk about my undies. And I have a spare cotton shirt to put on just for sleeping in, because I know it's dry, because it's in a dry bag.
Absolutely.
I've got a buff that I'll wear around my neck. And if it gets really cold, I can pull it up over my nose, and then I'm still not breathing into my bag, but I have something to insulate my face. And then I'll literally wear those things, and I'll save them just for sleeping in, because I've got welly boots on at the moment. My socks are going to have moisture in. I will have sweated into my boots. We've been working hard, been walking around the woods, collecting firewood. There will be moisture in my socks. Even if they feel dry to the touch, they are not going to be dry.
Yeah, that's the thing. No matter what you do, your feet always kind of perspirate. And that's, in fact, just kind of touching on that, Tom, I kind of have a good system for my footwear is I try not to, let's say if I'm travelling to a camp, I try not to travel in the same shoes.
Right.
So I have a pair of travelling shoes, a pair of travelling socks, because when I'm driving, I'm obviously perspirating, so I'm already defeating myself halfway before I've got to the camp.
That's a good call.
So I get to the camp and my boots have already got moisture in them, so as soon as the temperature drops, so do my feet.
You can feel it.
So if I can get to my camp spot, or if I can get to where I'm going to start my hike, then put on my fresh boots, my fresh socks, and know when I get to camp, I can then take off my boots, put my feet up, and maybe put a new fresh pair of socks on.
Yeah.
Then you're already kind of ahead of that battle. But even if you don't have that, having a pair to go into at night time is invaluable, and you can let your other pair just air out.
I never go to the woods without at least a pair of socks in my bag. Because if I'm staying the night, that ability to pull on a warm, dry pair of socks,
the morale booster,
it's just really nice. So I have a little routine before I get my sleeping bag. I get myself all sorted, go to the bathroom, do all the stuff I need to do before I go to sleep. And then I take my boots off and I sit and I look around the woods. If it's really cold, I might do some star jumps just to warm up my core temperature.
Yep.
But on my waterproof ground sheet so I don't get wet. And then I take my socks off after a little bit of time. And in that, by leaving my socks on, I've allowed them to start drying off.
Yes.
I then take my socks off and I massage my feet. It's a bit graphic, but it allows you to get that life back into them, and it allows the air to get to your feet.
Foot care is really important, yeah.
Some people talc their feet. It's really good in wet environments. But yeah, making sure your feet are dry before you put on your fresh socks.
Yeah.
Because if you've bothered to bring a nice pair of dry socks, you don't want to put them on wet feet.
No.
So if your feet look like sort of a granddad who's been in the bath for 5 hours,
let them air a bit.
Let them air for a little bit. Maybe put some talc on them. Then pop on your dry socks. And then you're about ready to get in your sleeping bag.
Yeah.
You can gradually warm your sleeping bag. So if we were having a little chat, maybe I'll put my legs in the sleeping bag, start warming it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's it. Because you don't want to get into it cold. You don't want to get into a cold sleeping bag. And you don't want to get into a sleeping bag cold. Because then, you're again, half of your energy is going to be spent warming that bag up.
Yes.
And that could have been energy that just was already instant warm.
Yeah,
you could have already done the process.
So if you're slowly warming it up, if you have to get out of it again and do some more star jumps to warm up and then get back in it, that's absolutely fine, because you're gradually rewarming that bag up to your body temperature, and you're keeping yourself warm at the same time, and allowing that bag to get to a more reasonable temperature for you to get into it. Because if you've left it lofting up, it's going to be around the same temperature as the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing, and they're an incredible bit of kit. The technology for them has come on so well, and I mean, they even can aid in things like drying your clothes. You know, if I've got a damp pair of socks, for example, I'm not talking wringing wet, but I've worn them, I'll put them in the bottom of my sleeping bag when I go to bed, because you'll be amazed just how much heat you're producing in that sleeping bag, and you will come out with a dry pair of socks in the morning.
Yeah.
Obviously, as long as you've got reducing moisture.
Yeah, so it just depends what sort of trip you're doing. Because if you're out for a long period of time, that might over time contribute to your bags.
Absolutely. If you're not able to air your bag out, I wouldn't suggest doing that.
No, absolutely.
That, you know? But if I know we're not going to have bad weather tomorrow, I've got a ridgeline set up and I can stretch my bag over, inside out, make sure that it breathes. That's an option.
Yeah, but you've got a fire to dry things out.
It's very situational.
Absolutely. So,
and that's really, cold weather is situational.
It is. Every trip out in the cold is different.
Yeah, and going even back to hot, you know, how down jackets can be an aid, because you said how kind of light they are. Also, because of their nature and their makeup, they fit really well under other layers, so they can be that part of that layering system.
Yes.
You can wear a windbreaker over the top.
Yeah,
a waterproof shell, and that's really how I tend to look at my layering system. I know when I went to the Galloway National Park, I really was really concerned about my layering system, because the weather can change up there in a heartbeat.
Definitely.
And we were going to be crossing rivers, hiking in mountains where we're quite far away from civilization, really. And it was a case of merino wool base layer for me.
Yep.
So I went with icebreakers.
Very good kit.
Yeah, and really, I'm still using them. In fact, I'm wearing the long johns today because I'm a bit of a skinnier chap. So I need every bit of help I can get. So icebreaker base layers, merino wool. I'd always recommend wool. Synthetics are good, but they don't help you so much when you get wet.
No, wool is a fantastic insulator, and as Liam says, it does retain some of its thermal value, some of its insulative value, even when it's damp. So yeah. I favour wool when I'm bushcrafting. I'm wearing a wool jumper at the moment. I've got a second wool jumper as a thicker layer,
yeah.
And that's my layering system for this trip. I've got a synthetic shirt, a wool thin jumper. I've got a thicker wool jumper to pull on if it gets really chilly.
Yep.
And then over the top, I have a wax canvas barber.
And it might be a bit more expensive, but it does last really, really well if you look after it well.
Yeah.
And it will keep you warm, which is the most important thing, isn't it?
Definitely. So I think that's the next bit of advice, is develop a layering system that works for you, whether you're using synthetics, whether you're using down, whether you're using wool and more traditional things like canvas.
Yeah, and a four kind of stage layering system is what I normally go for. So like a base layer, which is tight fitting,
yep,
close to my core, my legs, again, tight fitting, but not thick. You want to still be able to move. You don't want
to sweat either.
Or sweat, exactly.
It goes back to that evaporative heat loss. I'm a big chap, and I have always sweated a lot more than most people. It's just part of my makeup, obviously. So I have to be very careful to always make sure I bring spare clothes, because we walked in here with heavy packs, and even though I'm not out of puff, I'm sweating.
Yeah.
So I can feel that my t-shirt is still slightly damp from when we walked in. So I've got another one in there to put on when the temperature drops a bit later.
Yeah.
So
really clever.
Yep. It's adapting your system to work for you. So I know that I'm going to sweat, even if it's -7 and I walk into a woodland for a couple of miles with a rucksack on. I know by the time I get there, I will have sweated.
Yeah,
it's absolutely the reality for me as a big chap. So I need to pack for it. There's no sense in being prideful and being like, okay, no, I'm not going to sweat.
No.
And then freeze all night and be uncomfortable and unhappy.
And I often find, you know, that to aid in not sweating, lots of layers of thinner things rather than two or three layers of really thick things can really help you. So again, like I have my base layer, I then over the top of that in really cold weather can then put a looser fitting, let's say I've got a long sleeved base layer top on, I can put a short sleeve looser fitting base layer over the top of that, then a button up kind of check shirt kind of thing,
yep,
then my down jacket, if it wind starts to pick up, an outer shell like what I'm wearing now, which is a waterproof shell as well.
And between each of those layers, you're going to be trapping warm air.
Yeah.
Which is, as we've said earlier, a fantastic insulator.
Yeah, brilliant.
So a layering system like that works really well. And I actually think an outer layer is really important, because the wind chill can whisk away that heat so quickly. So having a waterproof, or like I've got a water-resistant barber, something just to stop that wind chill is so, so important.
I mean, we were really lucky last week, weren't we, that weather didn't come with any wind.
Yes.
It was very, very still, and it was -8. I mean, if it had been as windy as it was yesterday, we could have been looking at double figures minus.
Yeah.
Easily.
Absolutely. It was proper cold. So I remember going up Snowdon when the beast from the east hit with my good mate Heaney.
Yeah.
There's a video on my channel from a few years back if you're interested in watching us camp. And the real actual temperature, because we're in the UK, it doesn't get all that cold compared to other places in the world. The real temperature where we were, 800 metres up, was about -8, -9. But the feels like temperature, because of the wind chill, was -15 to -16.
Oof.
And by the morning, where we'd taken our boots off, because we were both bivvying on Snowdon that night, the beast from the east, where we'd taken our boots off, they'd frozen to the turf. In the morning, our gas canister that we'd use for cooking, when we turned it on, it took a lot to get it going because of the cold.
The gas had kind of like just sunk to the bottom.
Yeah, it was like it just didn't work properly.
Liquid state.
But it had that had frozen to the ground just by using it.
Yeah.
And like there was actually all of the condensation on the sleeping bag was ice in the morning.
Wow.
And that was the coldest I've ever experienced.
Lucky you had bivvies.
Because I've never skied or anything, so I'd love to, but I haven't.
No, likewise.
So I've not experienced -40 or anything like that. So for me, that -15 feels like temperature was the closest experience I've had to really cold weather.
Yes.
And so for that trip, we were very careful. We had our down jackets. We had a bivvy bag, because that's all we slept in, was a hooped bivvy. We had an insulative ground mat underneath us, and we were very careful with our layering system and not to introduce moisture into the sleeping bag.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we were out for actually a couple of days.
a learning experience.
A real learning experience and a fantastic adventure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
I mean, I have seen that video and I do recommend going to have a look at it, guys, because there is some stunning views here in the UK that you do forget about.
It looked alpine.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't look like the UK on that day. It was stunningly sunny, but it was that sort of sunny cold.
Yeah.
Like...
Absolutely.
I can't really explain it. It was like blue sky and freezing.
and that's why last week was so nice. You know, it was just that little glimpse of another way, another world that is out there. And we're not too far removed from it. I mean, it's only in my dad's life that the one of the coldest recorded temperatures was recorded. And that was only 5 or 10 miles down the road. And that was minus 27 and a half degrees at one point in a winter, sometime in the 60s. So yeah, I can't imagine having to go through that kind of temperature without adequate clothing. And that's what it's really about. It's looking at, like you said, layering systems. And that goes down to, again, boots. I have actually recently acquired a pair of new boots. They're Grease Sport Gamekeepers.
Very nice.
They're really nice, and they're actually really reasonably priced. I mean, £120, which in the boot market is...
It's a bargain.
...is a bargain. And they're fully waterproof all the way up to the top of the tongue, basically.
They're nice and high, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that's, again, really nice.
Really nice and high. And they are aimed more at the kind of hunting, stalking market. Mm. But that crossover, obviously, with bushcraft is very similar. You're often stalking through boggy terrain or up and down in the lowlands or across field borders, crossing ditches, through mud, laying down. And I really noticed that on the last stalk. I was in my lowers and my feet got so damp because I was just prone in a field for about 4 hours in the
afternoon. You sent me a picture and like you're fully immersed in that environment, aren't you, when you're doing that?
Absolutely. So. I mean, it was just... And my feet got so cold. You know, I was just having to keep wiggling my toes just to keep blood flow moving down there. And I kind of said to myself, look, that's the last time I'll get cold because my feet get damp.
Mm.
And that was a really big wake-up call. And investing in a pair of boots, they can be expensive, but it's worth looking around. Because that's one big place that you've got to look after your feet.
Yes.
Like we said earlier. And that's why, again, I try to minimise the moisture going into my boots even before I go on a trip. It's no point in driving 3 hours to a nice woodland to know that you're going to suffer all day because you've got damp feet from the drive.
Yeah, and I mean, my boot choice is, at the moment, I'm out in muck boots.
Yeah, briars, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really good. They're really for mucking out stables and sort of looking after horses. But they're nice and warm, and they're very strong, so I can beat on them.
They're brilliant.
I really like them, but they do have a downside, and that is that your feet will get damp.
Yes.
Because they're rubber and they don't breathe.
No, they haven't got like a Gore-Tex inner or something.
No, I mean, they've got the neoprene, so the top bit of them breathes better, but the bit that's all encased in rubber, you will have sweaty feet. So, But they won't get as wet. So again, if I'm wearing these, I just make sure I have a spare pair of socks.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even sock choice is a good thing to talk about. So I tend to use, when I'm outdoors, wool socks again.
I've got two pairs of wool socks on.
Yeah, I've got merino wool socks, and actually under that I've got a really thin kind of, it's not silk, it's not satin, it's kind of like a really thin cotton sock just under that as a tight layer to my foot, but not too tight. You don't want to constrict your feet, do you? Mm. You don't want a boot that's too tight, because if you cut enough blood circulation by all your socks are too tight, you've got no chance of getting water.
Why has my foot fallen off?
Exactly. So, and in fact, Ray Mears actually shared a really nice thing when I was at the Bushcraft show, and he said when he's in snowy or damp conditions, he tends to just have a, let's say, 9-inch by 9-inch square of cotton, white cotton, and he wraps it around his foot.
I've seen him do that.
And then
videos.
If you need to dry it out, you can just take it out, it's like a handkerchief, you can just hang it, and it dries out instantly.
So it's easier to dry.
How hard is a sock to dry out?
It's the hardest thing, yeah.
Because you've got all these nooks and crannies, the thick stitching, the reinforcement bits, the toes. How do you dry a sock? You know, you kind of, even with a vacuum, you know, with a hair dryer, you kind of got to blow it in to inflate the sock.
Yeah. I mean, if any of our listeners have tried drying their socks on the fire and ended up dropping it in the fire,
we've all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there, so... so footwear, that's a really important one for keeping yourself warm.
And we can go to the other end, can't you?
The other end, yeah, your head. You lose so much heat out of your head and neck area, so...
It's incredible, yeah.
To combat that, investing in a good quality wool hat and a good quality wool or or some other form of maybe a fleece scarf or something.
Yes.
I wear a merino wool buff.
That's because
I find that the most comfortable.
And versatile, because you can turn that into a hat.
Yep.
You can use it as a little sleeve for your hands if you need to. You can do loads of things with buffs.
Yeah, so a combination of something around your neck to keep the you feeling nice and toasty, and something like a wool hat to put over your cold ears. It will keep the heat in, it will keep you nice and toasty. And it's a massive, massively important way of combating the cold in winter.
Yeah, I mean, I always wear a hat, don't I, anyway?
Yeah.
Sun or rain or snow or ice.
And I'm following suit. I like my flat caps, but at this time of year, I've gone more to my woolen watch caps.
Yes.
So I'm wearing one by Fjällräven at the moment. I've got a really nice Carhartt one that I wear in a more urban environment, so when I'm walking to work and things like that.
Yeah, it looks really cozy.
And it's nice and cozy. Makes me look like a burglar.
It does. That's stereotypical.
But it's nice and cozy. So yeah, making sure you're not losing heat out of your extremities. So obviously your hands as well. Bring in with you a pair of gloves. When I was on the mountain in Snowdon, I had a pair of really nice black diamond mittens that had down insulation in them and a waterproof outer. I think it was down, it might have been synthetic, don't quote me on that. But whatever it was inside them, they kept my hands toasty.
That's so brilliant. Yeah,
protecting
it's really
your
important.
Extremities, I think, is the next point really to make.
Yeah, I've even got a pair of gloves with me. They're only thin because, like we said, it's not getting too cold today, so it just keeps that little bit of when it does drop in the evening. Gives me an opportunity to put them on and just warm up a little bit. Or if I'm going for a little stroll, obviously when you walk, the wind, the wind's not up, but you're going through the air a lot quicker, so that can have an effect as well. You notice that when you ride a bike in winter.
Absolutely.
Absolutely chilling.
Yeah. Yeah. So I brought Hestras with me that have they're leather outers.
They're brilliant.
And they've got a removable woolen inner.
Yes.
And so that way, if they get wet, you can take the inner out to dry it.
Yeah, I really like that. And it's a good thing, because you don't want damp gloves, and if you do get damp gloves, it's a good idea to try and dry them out. I mean, mine, again, like I said, they're quite thin, so it wouldn't take as long to dry out, but they're not, the back is kind of a synthetic material and the front is a suede, and they're more of a shooting glove, but it's just to take the chill off. But that suede again would take a lot longer to dry out, so it's again using them situationally. So if you are wearing gloves and you're going to be picking something up damp and they're your warm gloves, maybe take them off.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and have, like I have, I've got a pair of leather gloves that aren't lined.
Yeah.
That is for when I need to arrange the fire, or I need to pick up a pan or break some firewood or go collect some, because out here this time of the year everything's covered in kind of lichen and moss and
soaked. Everything's soaked.
Yeah.
The firewood, everything in this woodland is wet. It's still dripping wet from the amount of rain that we had yesterday. So it just, you have to plan for this stuff. And yeah, as Liam said, sometimes bringing a pair of workwear gloves and a pair of insulative gloves separately, and keeping your insulative gloves clean and dry whilst using your workwear gloves for all the dirty jobs, that can make the difference between your hands being warm and your hands being wet and cold.
Well, it gives you that backup, doesn't it? You know, and that's what it's about. It's having stuff to fall back on. So having an extra layer, like for example, I've got extra layers in my bag that I can put on. I've got a Fjällräven woolen shirt, the granite shirt, which I think both
we both use
a brilliant shirt. It's a nice, it's a blend, it's synthetic and wool, but it's got a nice kind of open but tight weave that allows the air to be trapped into there.
Surprisingly warm.
Very warm,
actually.
Yeah.
I liked it so much that I bought my dad one.
They're really nice. Yeah, he really suits it as well. And you can tuck it in, which is really nice because it is a bit oversized, so you can wear it as a kind of a shacket, you could say, or tuck it in. And I've got a down jacket.
You have.
So if I don't use one of them later when I'm going to bed, I'll probably put it actually under my loin area on the mat, because that's the area where obviously your kidneys are.
Yep.
Keep that area of your core nice and warm.
Nice and warm. And then I've got a little hide that I'm going to put under me as well.
Yeah, and there's other things you can do at night, isn't there? You
know, all sorts of things.
Hot water bottles.
Yeah, you use that a lot, don't you? You've got the David Fryer's bottle pouch, which is nice insulation for...
Yeah, it's like a net kind of material.
Stops you getting burned by the hot water.
Yeah, because that's always the thing. And if you don't have that, of course, if you've got one of your socks that you've been wearing in the day, and that's a little bit a little bit damp, what you could always do is stretch that over your hot water bottle. If you've got an Nalgene or a clean canteen, stretch that over your water bottle, put both of them over there and leave it stand just outside for a little bit to kind of cook that moisture off before you introduce it into your bag. But to try and get that hot water bottle right at the bottom of your bag where your feet are going to be,
makes them toasty.
Let it cook in there for a little bit, you know, seal that bag up. And we used it both, didn't we?
Well, you're getting the, you're warming up that bag, so when you get in, you're not losing temperature to your sleeping bag to get it up to a balanced temperature, because obviously if the hot water bottle has heated your sleeping bag and you get in it, you're going to feel the benefit immediately.
Yeah, definitely.
So the other thing, obviously, we're sitting in front of a fire.
Yep.
So having good fire management is a crucial skill, really.
Yeah, there's so many different types of fire, isn't there, for cold weather as well?
There are. At the moment, we've just got a little, it's like a cooking fire, but we're sitting quite close to it. It's big enough to give us enough heat to ward off that chill. And we've got some nice hardwood, we've got some ash. And if we want to get some flames after we cook, we might use some of the more sort of fast burning spruce and pine just to get the temperature back up.
Yeah, to get a bit of flame up.
Yeah, before adding more hardwood, which will burn for longer and warmer. So yeah, it's about having good fire management, keeping the fire going, keeping it nice and ticking over and keeping you warm. And you've got a Pomoli stove, haven't you, Liam, that you've been using?
I do, yeah. I've been hot tenting, so I actually did a little solo hot tent video last week, videos on my channel if you do want to have a little look. And I really, really did enjoy it because it was just a nice time to get out and enjoy the stove, which I've had for a little while. I got it last year for Christmas. My partner and my parents both put in a third and I put in the other third because they are quite expensive bits of kit, but they're something that's so versatile and I can use in different situations. So if I did get a cabin in the future, I could always put it in there. Or for example, like what I did last week, I went into the forest, into the snow, put up a Lavoo and just had a great time. It was absolutely amazing. And there's little nuances with that. You've got to want to bring a carbon monoxide detector.
Absolutely. It's really important to be safe.
Yeah, practice safe camping, really. You don't want to put yourself at risk to go out and have a nice time.
No.
And again, things like a stove baffle. I had a little whoopsie where the arm sleeve of the Lavoo folded back, there's a flap, and I should have really tucked that inside on hindsight. I didn't even think about it, but I made a stainless baffle which acts as a twin wall around the chimney, and it goes through the armhole and then the chimney goes through that, so the chimney doesn't touch any of the fabric. But anyway, the flap touched the corner I was sat in there and I thought, I can smell char cloth.
I'm not making char cloth.
I haven't lit my fire with char cloth. I haven't got any. I can really smell char cloth. And I was looked up and I saw this red glow by the chimney. I was like, that's not the chimney glowing. So I kind of opened the door, ran outside and kind of beating it with my glove. But there was a tiny little hole, so I had to get another half because it was in an area where it just couldn't be repaired. It was so close to the edge. It was kind of opening up that hole.
But that's a learning experience, isn't it? And like the good thing is you've got the humility to admit that, okay, I didn't think that through particularly.
Yeah, and on hindsight, I realised as well, I'd ordered the longer utensil holder that I turned into the baffle. So it has 12 holes. And then I kind of, after the camp, when I was editing the video, I can't remember what I was doing. I was on my phone and I saw the purchase, the order details. And I looked and I was like, hang on a second, this one's got 9. Three holes shorter. So I was like, if it probably was the 12.
It probably would have stopped it. Yeah, blame IKEA for
so,
it.
So yeah. But no, the lesson there is there's other things to use to keep you warm, like hot tents, hand warmers. We use hand warmers.
We
before.
Both have little hotties with us.
And hey. And technology shouldn't be one of these things that we should shun away from.
No.
So hot stove is a bit of technology. It's a manufactured bit of kit.
Down jackets, sleeping bags.
Exactly. And if you can get a jacket that's electronically heated, and you're going for a day trip in a cold
weather. It keeps you warm.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying rely on it for a camping trip or an expedition, but
there are no prizes for being sad and uncomfortable in the woods.
No, and you can utilise other things. You know, even a candle can warm your hands up. A little meth burner like a Trangia. Yeah, yeah. If you just need to warm your hands for 5 minutes, that could be a lifesaver. I've done that before up on the mountains in the Lake District. So cold, and could not see your hand in front of your face.
The fog
was so bad, and we were climbing. We were going over a boulder field. It's right in the middle of Scarfell Pike, if anyone knows it. In between Balfell and Scarfell Pike.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of this rubble field. I think it's called like the Giant's called Rubble Way or something. I can't remember. And we were just crouched behind this rock with a jacket over the top to try and give us some shelter, because that fog was so like settling damp. It's like a really slow rain.
Oh no.
And we were just in there with this little freezing gas stove, just just hands over, trying to, you know, wipe off the maps and the compasses to read our next bearing. Make sure we weren't going to go.
That sounds properly cold.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And afterwards, and even during it, you kind of learn to respect those little bits of preparedness, and it taught me lessons about layering and bringing different bits, being prepared for the weather to change. And that's thing you can't ever predict fully, so you've got to be prepared for the season.
And I think the thing is as well, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Go out there with enough of a safety net that you've brought enough layers and enough pieces of emergency equipment that if you get too cold, you've got things to pull on. And go out and experience, see how warm your sleeping bag is. Don't trust what the manufacturers tell you. The number of times I've gone out in the winter with a bag that's rated for exactly the temperature that it is, and I spend the whole night shivering because it's just not
as warm. And you soon realise that a bag, the temperature rating they're putting on it is, you will survive at that temperature. It's not saying you'll be comfort. And even at the comfort rating, it's...
like, I would still add a few degrees.
That's still, you're surviving maybe comfortably.
Yeah. Slightly more comfortably than packing it all in and going home.
And it goes down to what bushcraft's all about, and it's about being prepared, utilising things that you have, having knowledge about where you're going and the weather conditions that could be coming, and also being adaptive.
Yeah.
So adapting, taking off a layer if you're too hot so you don't sweat. Don't just power through it and think, oh, I'm really hot.
Yeah, not skipping steps.
That really hot now is a really cold later.
Exactly.
And
skipping steps as well. Like, if you were to skip the drying your feet, be like, oh, I don't need to do that, I'd be fine. I'm sure it'd be fine. And then you spend the whole night shivering. For that 3 minutes you could have spent drying your feet out and putting a pair of socks on.
8 hours of misery.
You got 8 hours of misery. So it's not being too proud to admit that actually it's cold.
No.
We should be adapting ourselves to this environment. I mean, I've done it many times where I've just tried to muscle on through. I've been like, oh, I'm a big guy, the fat will keep me warm. And it just hasn't. I remember I went camping in the winter with Emma last year. It was like her first tarp camp, and it wasn't dead winter, but it was a pretty chilly night. I think
I remember it was a cold time.
It was it was just, I can't remember when it was, but it was cold enough that you knew about it.
Absolutely.
And I gave her my warm bag, and I brought a three-season bag, and spent the whole night very, very cold.
Oh,
and
boy.
I hadn't brought enough layers.
No.
Because I'd sort of be like, oh, I'll try and look cool in front of Emma, you know. I don't need many layers.
Yeah.
Tough it out.
It's hard. I mean, when me and Ellie go camping, we actually have a double bag.
Yeah.
Because that other person's body warmth is just...
Yeah.
Obviously, you can't really beat it.
Is that what we're doing later, Liam?
Well, I didn't bring it, but I'm sure our zips will fit together somehow.
We've just lost.
But no, I think you're completely correct there. There's no points in being humiliated by your own kind of stubbornness.
No.
And no one likes being cold, let's admit it. People live in cold conditions all around the world and they strive to get warm. So it's a case of fighting against the elements. And I really just want to say thank you, Lee, as well for that question, because that's a really, really good discussion.
And
it's
given us a whole episode, so thank you. I'm sure you thought it would be a 2 second thing
answer
for us to talk about, but actually it's been really good, because we've actually been thinking about it, and it's reminded me a few good practices.
And I think it kind of leads on to, you know, a good thing for me to bring us into, which is the Bush Solutions, which is a big part of the Woesman podcast, isn't
Absolutely. It? Before we get to the Bush Solutions, I've just got one last thing I want to say.
Go on.
So, obviously, in England, we're always like, oh, we can't complain about it being cold.
Yeah.
Because people are out there in minus 40 in Canada and not complaining about being cold.
Yes.
But the reality is, you can get hypothermia at 4 degrees.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't have to be negative 40 for you to get hypothermia. So just thinking, oh, I can't get that here, it's not going to be that bad, people have it a lot worse all around the world. Yes, it's colder in a lot of places, but there is the dampness and stuff to consider about the UK.
Yeah,
and you can get hypothermia in quite mild conditions.
Yeah, and the thing about water is, as we learned in the Woadsman trivia, you can lose your temperature up to 30 times more.
In water, with water immersion.
30 times faster in water than you can in air. So if you're damp, you can imagine that's got to add some influence to your loss of temperature, like you said.
And it doesn't take much to get to a hypothermic situation, really.
No.
So our normal body temperature is around 37.5 degrees, something like that, in that ballpark. It only has to drop, your core temperature only has to drop to 35 degrees.
And so stay there
about
for a while.
2 degrees, for you to be in serious trouble.
Yeah.
So it's just a little reminder before we get onto Bush Solutions that actually, whilst it's not cold like it is in Canada and Alaska and, you know, in all those lovely places that we would love to visit, it's still cold and we have the damp to thing, and it doesn't make you any less of a bushcrafter to admit you are cold.
No, and you do get used to your environment. You do get, you know, what you're exposed to is what is relevant to you. For us, it's been quite a very mild summer. So coming into ending a very warm summer, which has prolonged in way into August, way into autumn, sorry. You know, it's gone way further nearer to winter. We were having a heat wave.
Yeah.
And then it's gone straight down to negative
almost
eight.
Overnight.
Almost overnight. And then again, you can see the flick back, it's going to be 13 again. So we're having this incredible fluctuation. So
your body just doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. And I like that point because it's a good one. Like you say, you shouldn't get complacent because it's too easy to get into a little sticky situation through complacency. And like we said, it's a case of utilizing the layers that you do have. And it doesn't always have to be flashy gear.
Yeah.
Plenty of places like, you know, even grocery stores nowadays, supermarkets, you go in, you'll find their version of a down jacket. It might not be actual down, it might be a synthetic fibre, but it still has the same benefits.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Bush Solutions then, Liam.
Yes.
Something that we want to make a bit of a Woadsman tradition. We've been on air for over a year now.
Yeah, we have.
Which is fantastic.
And thank
really
you
good.
To every single one of you for sticking around, and of course to those of you last year who sent them in.
Absolutely, it really is appreciated, and we do this out of, like, we don't get anything for doing this. It's a passion project for
nothing
us.
Yeah, no, there's no monetization, there's no there's nothing. We do it for the pure love of sharing it and having the conversations with each other and interacting with you guys, the listeners. Nothing makes us smile more than getting a nice message.
No, for sure. So my Bush Solution to start things off then, Liam, is just to keep the podcast going for another year.
Yeah, that's a really good one, actually.
Like, because I'm really enjoying doing it with you.
And I know how hard it's been for you to have time.
It has been really hard because I've got a new job, I've just got engaged, and the job that I do, I absolutely love. And it's very intense because it's working with young children, and you're responsible for those children.
Yeah, your work doesn't switch off.
You care for them. So you might go to bed at night worrying about a certain kid in the class or thinking about how can I improve their maths or all that sort of stuff, you know? So
you've got their parental responsibilities.
When they're with you,
you are
all in. So my Bush Solution is, despite wanting to give my job everything that I have during term time, is to still be able to do the podcast, still be able to meet up with Liam as and when we can. We won't get as many camps this year as I did when I was off for a year, but we will still get camps together. And so my Bush Solution is to keep the podcast going, keep getting the odd little video trickle to my channel, and just keep spending a little bit of time with my good mate Liam.
And
having a laugh in the woods together like we have today. Like, we both just text each other last week, should we do the podcast in person together? I was like, yeah, I've broken up for the Christmas holidays. Fantastic. Got down here.
It's just been amazing.
And we've just spent 2 days together. So hopefully we can do a lot more of that this year and capitalise on the time we have.
I like that, Tom. That's a really good Bush Solution. And I know deep down it's going to be one you're going to be able to fulfil, which is amazing. And if any of you guys did manage to fulfil your Bush Solutions from last year, please do let us know.
Yes.
That would be just something extra special to hear from you guys. And you can obviously do that through Instagram or send us an email at thewoadsmanpodcast@gmail.com. And my Bush Solution then going on from that would be to take more time to actually to just research a little bit further into things. I sometimes get a little bit, you know, sidetracked with doing them, then doing the craft, then
I
then
feel kind you of, on that. Yeah,
you know, I get so excited and going out and practicing something that I don't actually look at the history of it. And it's something that Joe Price brought up, you know, when he was saying about the name of the Bolson rig.
We'll have to do some more research.
Exactly. But so it's stuff like that, really. Going back into the history of why we've been doing things as bushcrafters, because I've part of the channel, obviously, for me, Primal Nomad, and it's looking at the primal roots of where bushcraft came from. So I think that's something that I want to focus a little bit more on. Not so much the primitive crafts like flint napping. I do like toying with those things, but I'm not a professional flint napper by any means. But looking more into the history of bushcraft and seeing where that journey takes me, because there's so many other things to learn, and I don't want to get kind of tunnel vision into the YouTube and
content creation
image of what bushcraft
is. It's so easy to do that, and I think we love creating our videos, but it is there's always a slight conflict between actually everything we do we have to film because it's expected by
You said that you literally hit it on the nail on the head this morning or today earlier when we'd set up camp. You said, in reality, Liam, if we were just setting up camp like that without the camera gear, that would have been done in 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, like, with the fire going. Like, we did get our tarps up in 10 minutes, and we did get our fire going in 10 minutes. But in between all of those things, we're getting shots. We are getting angles. We're taking photos. And, like, that's great. I love the content creation side. I love sharing it with people. And for
it's an inspirational thing for people, isn't it? Yeah. You do it for that reason, to inspire others.
And I make the videos as well for myself, because I like to look back on trips and be like, oh, that was a great time I had then, and look back on them in a couple of years and watch them again, and it will just put a smile back on my face.
Yeah.
So that's why I do the videos. But there is always that conflict between, actually, when I'm doing a tarp setup without a camera there, so much more efficient.
Oh yeah, incredibly. So you don't kind of think, oh, that looks pretty, I'll film that. So I think for me it's a combination of all of those things, really, going back to the roots of bushcraft.
Very nice and
spending a bit more time in the woods, exploring.
And then just to add on to mine, I also would like to keep doing a bit of my courses and stuff.
Yeah.
So I've got some planned. So we haven't got the dates finally confirmed, but I have submitted 3 or 4 dates for spoon carving, and I am going to be on a number, I think 3 at this point, of the Frontier courses as an assistant.
So some prospective chances for you guys to come and see Mr. Back Garden Bushcraft himself.
Yes.
And probably myself, because I'll hopefully be assisting in at least a few of those courses.
Yeah, so I've asked Liam
carving courses.
I've asked Liam to come and give me a hand at Badgell's when he can, just to give us some more time together, really, in the woods. And
we'll give you a bit of a break from doing the while you're teaching, I can be getting stuff ready for later when the students are finished and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, and that will be very, very much appreciated by me, for sure.
So I think we should ask the listeners for their bushalutions.
I think we should. I think it would be fantastic to get some bushalutions for 2023 and just hear what you guys have planned, really, for the year. What bushcraft things do you want to work on? What do you want to focus on? What do you want to learn? What do you want to get out and do?
Yeah, and what would be a skill, you know, something like that? What would be a skill that you want to crack? What thing do you want to, like Tom said, master? And, of course, a bushalution is just a New Year's resolution coined in our little Woesman phrase.
Way.
So just to avoid any confusion there.
And if people are looking for bushalution sort of
examples,
techniques and examples, if someone was to say wants to work on their bushalution of improving their feather sticks, I would just like to, he hasn't asked me to say this, I would just like to give a massive shout out to Joe Price, who's been on our podcast so many times. He has written, he's gone into great depth about a single skill, and he's written a little PDF guide to making the perfect feather stick.
Fantastic looking little field guide. I've still got to delve into it. I did have a cheeky flick at a page.
Yes, so did I. So I'd just say, if that is your bushalution, go and have a look at Joe Price's website. We'll pop it down in the description and have a look at his little guide on it. If you're your bush solution is to try hot tenting this winter for the first time. I noticed Paul Kirtley had released a guide on his Paul Kirtley blog.
Oh, brilliant. I should
and
have a look at that.
I would just like to give him a shout out and say, go on over there. His blog is a wealth of content.
Definitely.
And there will be something on there that, that you would be like, I could work on that this
year.
Yeah,
I probably could have like actually done with reading that before my trip, because I'm sure there's something in there about fire management, so which is one of the hardest things with the stove. But
definitely,
that's for you guys to learn, listeners.
So whatever it is that you want to work on this year, let us know. Please do get in touch. Tell us all of the adventures you have planned. Be lovely to hear about like planned trips, planned camps, things you want to work on.
Yeah.
We just love hearing from you guys.
You and if you want examples of some bush solutions, if you're stuck for ideas, like what could I say? We had quite a lot last year, so definitely go out, check our previous episode, which is titled Bush Solutions.
Yeah, that would be New Year last year.
Yeah,
some point that was released.
So there were some really great ones from there, and again, thank you to those people. And there'll be a little bit in the bottom of Spotify, I should imagine, where you'll be able to post your bush solution, and like we said, put it on Instagram or through the Woadsman email address, which will be in the show notes.
Absolutely. I think that sums it up for today. So thank you to Lee for submitting that question. Thank you to all of you for listening. And I think that just leaves us to wish everybody a happy new year.
A very, very happy new year. And I hope it brings everything you could wish for and your bush solutions come true.
Absolutely. Stay safe, guys.
See you soon.